Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Friday, January 28th, 2022. I'm your host, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is GameSpot's Timur Hussein.
From the number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 video game website on the internet.
Yeah.
Blessing.
But
yesterday,
I heard you were the 4th best video game website for Elden Ring.
Here's the thing. This is what was said by one Greg Miller, who has been pissing about for the last 3 months. He's been MIA for 3 months doing God knows what. When that happened, when he was getting ready to go away, I don't know what he's been doing. I think he's been changing a tire for 3 months. That's how Eustace is at that, apparently.
He just needed a break. He was just like,
he just needed a break. He made some story about having a baby or something like that. And I was like, bro, I got you. Whatever you need,
like,
I'll
Miller,
do it
we know
for you.
You haven't had sex, all right? This guy, lying about your child.
This guy doesn't even know what sex is, okay?
Exactly.
He was like, I need to go. I've come up with an elaborate scheme about having a baby. Will you do Kinda Funny Games Daily? And I was like, 100% I'll do that for you. I love you. I respect all of you. I love Kinda Funny. I'm a best friend. I love the people who watch Kinda Funny. I will do this. It is my honor. Mm-hmm. Little did I know, when he returned from his fake baby break, he would slander me. And he would slander me by saying that not only am I not do I not represent the number one video game website in the world, but he put it as the number 4 video game website for Elden Ring. And he did that in favor of a magazine. A magazine.
Not a website.
Not a website. Who is reading magazines in 2022? I'm sorry to everyone at GameFormer. You got a website, so I don't feel that bad about it. But paper. Paper that you go to a store to purchase or have delivered for you. Do you know the only kind of physical paper I have in my house right now? Toilet paper.
Oh,
I put it on my ass. And cash money. Thank you, Barrett.
That's you.
However, out of respect, I will not be saying anything further about Greg Miller. He's a good man. He's apparently got a baby, so he's probably stressed out.
Nobody's seen this baby, by the way. I don't know if you've seen it.
Whenever
this man seemingly posts his baby, it's always censored out. Like
yeah, there's always like an emoji there. Did he give birth?
That is just Portillo.
Yeah.
It's just Portillo that he's hiding. He's like, oh, yeah, it was my baby. You had a baby. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, this is my
sex.
Baby. It's my baby, dog.
I didn't take a 3-month vacation for no reason and left everybody to work way harder than they should have for three months.
Out of respect for Greg Miller, who has created this business, this home for many of us gamers alongside you all fine folks, I will not be talking shit about him for any further. I will just respect his opinion and agree to disagree because, you know, sometimes the OGs, you got to give them respect because of what they've done, you know? And if you step out of line, you get clapped. And I'm not looking to get clapped. You know,
You call him an OG, which I feel like is your way of calling him old. Which I respect.
Cowboy.
Dude, I feel like by the day, that man looks older. You know, like, you saw what's going on with his eye. It's like, bro. Oh, man.
He's like, I love PS Vitas, but you can see it's not there anymore. His eyes are dead. His soul is leaving. I think he's done. Like, he's going to be smoking cigarettes on a loading screen before we know it.
Remind me to never diss GameSpot, by the way, because Timur is, like, on a rampage. Timur is on fire today.
For you. Like, I'm telling you, he banned me. He timed me out immediately after he said it, and he knew that he had to do that because you don't want that smoke with me.
Mm.
I was born and raised on the internet, Greg.
They call Tam the Pusha T.
You might be. Exactly. You are Drake. Everyone who comes at me is Drake. I will expose your baby on the internet. Okay. I will tell everyone that you got a baby. Okay.
Yeah, or that you don't have.
You don't
a baby
want that
case.
Smoke with me on the internet. I have murdered countless people, metaphorically, on the internet.
I will say that GameSpot is in my top 2. All right. It's in my top two.
Thank you. Right? I appreciate that. I respect it.
Video Games Chronicle, really good website. I reference them all the time. They have really good write-ups. They break a lot of news. I feel like they don't get the respect they deserve.
They're my former coworkers. I came up with them, so I got to show love to them.
Exactly. But GameSpot firmly in that number two.
Tam, how were you born on the internet?
I was born on the internet.
How?
Don't ask questions. Okay. Barrett, I'm just there. You name, like, I'm on a show called The Very Online Show. It's literally about the internet. I'm explaining the internet to people who are on the internet, and they're like, God damn, I did not know that. Me and Lucy James and Jeff Backlow over at
Tam. Tam could probably tell you all about Newgrounds, right? Tam can tell you about...
Trust me, I know about Newgrounds. I can tell you old school... I can tell you about shit that was happening.
Tell me about the Impossible Quiz.
IRC, baby. You don't know about IRC, okay? The video game world... The video game press at one point basically began on IRC. People who work at GameSpot and 1UP and... various other places, they used to hang out on IRC, and that's where they found each other and created these websites. And I was a baby at that time, but I was there just watching, you know, learning. It's biding
that's
my
time.
You need
to know, everybody. Tam is seasoned in the game and is here to talk to you about video game news. So Tam, let's talk about, if I can tab over to see what's going on my dog, let's talk about today's stories, which include a big new Halo mode seemingly in the works, an Xbox Monster Hunter clone seemingly in the works, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news needs to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you're wrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. I hit the my mic stand instead of the desk because lately I've been doing a lot of gaming, Tam. People know right there, because it's a new season, Tam. I don't know if you looked out the windows recently. I don't know if you've seen the colors of the leaves changing.
No,
I don't know
stop.
If you felt the
no.
breeze of the stop. Wind on your skin, Tam. But Tam. No. It's review season, and so I've been playing a lot of video. It's review season, Bear. It's review season. I'm playing a lot of video games, Tam. And some of those video games, I'd be dying. All right. And when I tell you that I've started banging my desk, not like toxic masculine, I'm punching holes in the wall, just like soft, like love taps to my desk. Right. It's gone to the point where I've done that a few times, and it's turned off my computer, and it's turned off. It's messing with my power outlet. And so now I'm like scared to tap my desk because I don't want to turn everything off. So I got to figure out what that is. I got to fix that. But that's why I'm not banging on this table.
You might need to hit up like, what was that standing desk company? And be like, yo, every time I touch my desk, everything explodes. Can you hook me up?
Yeah. So, I need to hit up Kevin Coelho and be like, yo, I need that extra screw. This really left out. I need it because things are starting to go awry. I don't even know where I was in the housekeeping. If you're watching live, of course, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindafunny.com/you're wrong. If you don't want to watch, I did all this. Around the globe, that's where I stopped. The globe, by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. If you don't want to watch live, listen on YouTube, Rooster Teeth, all that stuff. Remember, you can use Epic creator code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be part of the show, to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in, and silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, of course, is Friday, which means that XCast is recording live later today on Patreon. You can go listen to that if you're a Patreon supporter, and that goes up for everyone tomorrow on YouTube and podcast services around the globe. Right after this show, Greg's doing a Kind of Funny community podcast-a-thon. He's doing 5 different KFBF podcasts right after KFGD live on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. So come hang out, watch them all. Thank you to our Patreon producers, James Davis at James Davis Makes, Blackjack, and Pranksy. Today we're brought to you by Purple Mattress and Babbel, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have 7 stories today.
Baker's Dozen.
And let me tell you, we spent a lot of time just in the rigmarole, just hanging out at the top of the show for how many news stories we have. We got a lot to talk about. This first news story is 2 news stories in 1, basically. This comes from Tom Ivan at Video Games Chronicle. Certain Affinity, the developer, may be working on a new Halo Infinite mode, as well as an Xbox Monster Hunter clone. The article reads like this. Certain Affinity could be working on a new game mode for Halo Infinite, it's been claimed. The prolific support studio, which is based in Austin, Texas, has collaborated on installments in the Halo and Call of Duty franchises since 2007, as well as shooters Left 4 Dead and Doom. Windows Central says it received hints that the studio may be developing a new game mode for Halo Infinite, which could be the shooter's take on Battle Royale or something else entirely. The report also backs up claims that Xbox is working on a Monster Hunter-style co-op game with Certain Affinity. On Thursday, GameSpeed journalist Jeff Grubb said in a giant bombshell that Certain Affinity had teamed up with Microsoft to make a, quote, Monster Hunter clone, end quote, designed to offer greater variety in its Game Pass lineup. Quote, they're like, we probably can't get Monster Hunter on Game Pass. That would be pretty expensive. But we definitely want a game like that because we see the potential for that to grow and be a big thing with long-term support, he said. Windows Central's Jez Corden said he'd also been informed about Certain Affinity's Monster Hunter-style game, which is reportedly codenamed Project Suerte. His sources suggested the project has been in development since the summer of 2020 and that it's likely planned to be revealed next year ahead of a release in 2024. Tim, we have a Monster Hunter clone and we have a new mode for Halo Infinite that could be Battle Royale. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the Halo mode. Certain Affinity... A studio thought as always being the bridesmaid and never the bride has done a lot. You might be surprised to learn in the Halo universe. It's done DLC for Halo 2. The Blastacular map pack was their stuff. It helped with co-developing Halo Waypoint, I believe, and did DLC for Reach. They co-developed Combat Evolved Anniversary Edition. They worked on Halo 4. They worked on the Master Chief Collection. And they co-developed Infinite as well. So it's unsurprising that they were finally like, yo, please, let me get married. And now Microsoft is like, or 343 is kind of giving them the space to make something. I think they're a great developer, and like they have shown in the past that they clearly understand a lot of what Halo is. So I think it makes perfect sense for them to take what's already there and try and spin it into something new and elaborate and kind of build upon the foundation that exists on with Infinite. And I think that Infinite is in a state where it feels like it's still waiting for kind of more to define it, if you get what I mean. Like, it's a kind of complete package, but it also feels a little bit like an early access game in a lot of ways. So it makes sense that there's not a preciousness over who's doing what for it right now. It's not like if this new story is being met with, oh my God, no, only 343 can make this game. It has to be internal studios. That's not how they're approaching it. It feels like that there's enough... It feels like Halo Infinite is still an open blank-ish canvas, and having a developer that is familiar with Halo, as familiar as a Certain Affinity is with Halo, to drop in and be like, we've got an idea and we can make something cool with it, makes perfect sense to me. Especially given that they're treating Halo Infinite as a platform and with the idea that everything in there is going to be iterated on. The worst case scenario is they put out something that's not mind-blowing, but it becomes something mind-blowing later on, which has happened many, many times in the past. If it's about Royale, we've got Fortnite to look at, and even Apex to a degree as well.
Yeah.
COD, Warzone, they all grow. So if it's like, hey, you folks take care of, you know, the Battle Royale mode for this, and that'll become your baby, perfect, amazing.
Yeah, Halo, I think Halo is a franchise too that has proven that it doesn't just have to be solely tied to one developer, because historically you connect Halo to Bungie, right? But now Halo is 343, and with Halo Infinite, I think they've done a good job of establishing themselves as a studio that can handle it, right? Like, we've had some we've hit some bumps in the road to get there, but now that we're here with Halo Infinite, we put out something that can work as a platform. And like you said, right, Halo Infinite feels like a game that feels like it is in its infancy in terms of content, right? The mechanics are there, the feel of gameplay is there, the game is fun, and they really nailed down the formula. Now what I think is left is to fill in content and create a journey for players where, you know, year one looks like this, year two looks like this. It reminds me of Apex Legends, actually, where that game launched beginning of 2019, and then last year we got Apex Arenas, which is an entirely new mode for Apex Legends, right? But still works with those same mechanics and same everything, but creates a new way to progress, creates a new way to play. And for me, it ended up with me putting in somehow 80 hours, according to my PlayStation wrap-up, of gameplay into Apex and not even realizing it because I was playing so much arenas and having such a blast with it that, like, that became my sole way to play. If I'm going to pick up Apex Legends again now, I'm going to play arenas because I love that mode. That is what I think you want to do with Halo Infinite, where, you know, right now the game feels focused on having a good landing. You know, we have campaign out there, let people play that, let people get their initial experiences with Halo Infinite in, and as we're in this launch phase of it, let's figure out the maps, let's figure out what maps people like, what people don't like, let's phase in the modes that people like, let's phase out the modes that people don't like and polish. And then once we get into it a little bit deeper, now let's add in Forge and the stuff that, or is it called Forge in Halo? It is called Let's add in Forge. Let's add in, you know, campaign, co-op, the things that felt like they were missing from launch and the things that are most highly requested from the fans. And then from there, let's grow, right? And I could easily see, 2023, 2024, adding in a Battle Royale. And to bring in certain affinity, I think if you're going to have another studio work on a specific mode, that is bigger than just a new capture the flag type thing, right? That isn't just a regular mode. That isn't just something you're going to add into a playlist. I think that is going to be a new menu item kind of thing of, it is going to be a battle royale or something of that size, which I think could be exciting.
Yeah, for sure. And when it comes to the Monster Hunter clone, it's not exactly a spicy take, but it makes perfect sense, like, that they would want something like this. I think that we're going to get a lot more, I don't know what the best way to, I think of this approach to Monster Hunter, or I think of Microsoft and Xbox's want and desire for a Monster Hunter to be the same as a want and desire for another games as a service title, if you get what I mean. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that Monster Hunter does really well is that it is a games as a service title to a degree. It just doesn't feel like one at all. This is like a lifestyle game. Maybe that's a better way to think about it, but they put out one game and people play that for hundreds and hundreds of hours, and they play it together communally with a bunch of people. It is not that different from a Destiny or a MMO where, you know, I know groups of people who log on every day and they'll go on hunts and hang out. And I think that is something that is perfect for Game Pass, because people, you know, Microsoft wants people to subscribe to Game Pass and then also, you know, stick around and think of it as their main form of entertainment, the way that, you know, you would go to, you know, gather around a cinema screen around with friends, or just hang out with a bunch of friends, jumping into a Monster Hunter like experience, having a kind of combined goal and knowing and growing together. That is like super, super important for them. I think it's really interesting that they want to do it at a time when, you know, Monster Hunter is popping like it's never been popping. Like, it's everywhere now and it's really hitting. You might argue that they tried something like this to a degree before, like they've done, you know, I think maybe what was it, Scalebound could have been something like that, but
the reason why I bought an Xbox One Scalebound.
RIP. And there's stuff like, you know, Dauntless and that kind of stuff out there, but nothing hits in the same way that Monster Hunter does.
See, that's what I wanted to ask chat, that like if chat can give me feedback. This doesn't even need to be kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. I'll just keep an eye out. Are there Monster Hunter clone type games that have hit on a big level? Because you mentioned Dauntless. I know Freedom Wars came out on the Vita and Greg Miller really liked it, but you know, if we're talking about the popularity of Monster Hunter, is there anything else that stands beside that is hit in the same way? Let me know, chat.
There's stuff like God Eater, and to a degree, even Peace Walker, Metal Gear, was kind of inspired by Monster Hunter back in the day. And like, that is the, outside of Monster Hunter, that is, Peace Walker is the game that I most like played that had that similar vibe. I think there was one as well, which was on, I think it was the PSP, it was like Toki, yeah, something like that.
My story with that game is when I was in college, I was going to say my college is a library. Every college has a library. I was in my college library and I found that they had like a small game section, which blew my mind. I didn't realize that you could have video games in libraries, but apparently it's a common thing. So I saw that game section. I started looking through of games I could check out from the library, and I saw, Toukiden sitting there, and I was like, I don't know what this game is. This looks cool. It looks like some JRPG type bullshit. That sounds like me. Let me check this game out. Played it for an hour or two and was so confused and so lost that I did not understand what it was. Because this is before I even like knew what Monster Hunter was.
Yeah, nothing's hitting the way that Monster Hunter is hitting. And it's important to remember that Monster Hunter has only just started hitting in the way that Monster Hunter is hitting, if you get what I mean. Like, World and Rise were the big, big pop-offs. Like, I'm an old-school Monster Hunter player. Like, I started with the PS2 version, which was a nightmare hellscape to play. But, like, the PSP versions is where I spent most of my time, and then I started, like, falling off from there as they kept coming. I dipped in and out of all of them just to make sure I knew what I was talking about when I was talking about Monster Hunter. But, like, the 3DS one is pretty amazing. There's a couple of amazing ones. But Rise and World are really, really, really the points where people started paying attention to it and like thinking about it. And they're two amazing games because like World feels like a more classic one, whereas Rise feels like it's designed more to be portable again, and it's phenomenal. I'm interested in, I think that the tricky part that certain Affinity and Microsoft, or the challenge they have, is they need to be able to make it feel like Monster Hunter, but also make it stand out from Monster Hunter. Because if it's just kind of like Monster Hunter and okay, I think the reason that there haven't been many clones is people always just go to Monster Hunter. It's such a unique experience that if you're not better than it while also being like it, you're going to be forgotten easily. So like such a hard tightrope to walk. And it's incredibly, incredibly difficult. I'm not even sure that they can pull it off, but I don't know. It's worth a shot. No one else is trying. Or people are trying, but no one else is hitting. And I feel like there's a lot of mileage to be gained from doing it and being successful with it. And if anything, like we said, like a certain Affinity's approach to Halo, there is an argument to be made for them just trying and then iterating until it's good. And because it's a games as a service title, there is an expectation that people will come. If you build it and carry on building it and make it good, people will come. And Sea of Thieves is probably just like the best example of that. Didn't start off amazing, became amazing, is everything, you know, people talking about it nonstop now.
Yeah, and I think Game Pass makes this more viable of an idea of, okay, yeah, I can subscribe to the streaming server, subscription service that I'm already subscribed to, right, because I'm playing all these other games, now have access to this Monster Hunter clone type game that Xbox has put out. Let me check it out, right? Or I hear that months later down the road that they're adding in content that some people are telling me that it's worthwhile. Okay, cool. Let me now jump into it and see what it's about. Yeah, Sea of Thieves had that thing where it launched, it, you know, felt like it needed more content, felt like it needed more stuff there, but it got there, right? And now years later, it has a thriving player base, and they're talking about launching in their biggest content year yet. I think Game Pass really opens up the doors in terms of that happening more and more. And yeah, Xbox being behind it and approaching a certain Affinity with the idea of it, I think that puts them in a good place in terms of having the Xbox push of marketing and Xbox advertising and Xbox going, hey, let us put this in front of everybody so that like you know that we have this ongoing game that we want you to try out, in the way that Game Pass, I think, really creates a good flow of, all right, this month you're getting this, next month you're getting this, right? This month you're getting, what's the Obsidian game with the bugs where you're small? Grounded? Yeah, this Grounded, month you're getting Grounded, right? This month you're getting this next game. I think to put certain Affinity's Monster Hunter clone game in that conversation of, okay, cool, in this game seems like it's far away, right? The article says 2024. But hypothetically, right, let's talk about this year because this year is clear. If, let's say, in July you get Redfall, right? Redfall is going to own that for Game Pass, likely. And then if you could say that, hey, in August you're going to get this certain Affinity Monster Hunter game, I think that then shifts conversation in a very smart way, marketing and advertising wise, in terms of controlling the message, controlling the talk, and allowing your audience to kind of dip their toes into all these different games, even if beforehand they would not have as much of an interest in playing those games, but they're just there on Game Pass, and so why not?
Yeah, I think that's a good approach. And I also, like, if you haven't played Monster Hunter, like, check out World, check out Rise. There's always communities that are super, super into walking you through those games, and there's such a massive knowledge base out there for you to dig into. They're on PC, they are on Xbox and PlayStation, and they are so much fun. They're one of the best community driven experiences that you can have. I'm sure there's like a bunch of people in the a bunch of KF best friends that would love to join up to play some Monster Hunter, so it's worth a try.
Tim, I'm very happy to have you on the show because I hear out there that GameSpot is the number one website.
Number one.
For Souls and Elden Ring content. So story number two, we got a statement from From Software where they're talking about Elden Ring's difficulty. This comes from a Q&A on the PlayStation blog. I'm very excited to talk to you about this, Tam, where over on the PlayStation blog, they have a whole Q&A go up, right? It's them talking to Miyazaki about the game. But one of the questions out here stood out to me because I think it's a interesting thing to bring up, especially going into Elden Ring, because I know this is going to be a big conversation topic about it. And so to jump into the PlayStation blog, they did a Q&A format, right, where it's question and answer, right? The question here where they asked, this comes from the PlayStation blog, quote, how has the ongoing discourse around game difficulty and accessibility impacted the way you tailored and maintained From Software's trademark difficulty in Elden Ring? Was this something your team has been trying to be more mindful of? That is the question from the PlayStation blog. Miyazaki, Elden Ring's director, answered like this, quote, yes, we have. It's a valid discussion. I feel like our approach to these games, not just Elden Ring, is to design them to encourage the player to overcome adversity. We don't try to force difficulty or make things hard for the sake of it. We want players to use their cunning, study the game, memorize what's happening, and learn from their mistakes. We don't want players to feel like the game is unfairly punishing, but rather that there's a chance to win a difficult encounter and make progress. We understand that Souls-like games are regularly associated with the impossible levels of difficulty with high barriers to entry, but we try to design the games to make the cycle of repeatedly trying to overcome these challenges enjoyable in itself. So we hope that with Elden Ring and the new options it provides, it'll be a success in that respect. In Elden Ring, we have not intentionally tried to lower the game's difficulty, but I think more players will finish it this time. As I mentioned, the player's level of freedom to progress through the world or return to a challenge later are all elements that I feel will help people get through the game at a more leisurely pace. Also, there isn't a focus on pure action. The player has more agency to dictate their approach against, for example, the field bosses in the overworld and how they utilize stealth in various situations. We've even reduced the number of hoops that you have to jump through to enjoy it in multiplayer. So we hope that players embrace that idea of receiving help from others, and we feel like the overall clear rate will go up this time because of these things. End quote. Tam, do you think that's a good statement from Miyazaki?
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic statement from Miyazaki. This is something I talked about with a friend of the show, Zach Ryan, on his stream. But like, I think this is a necessity as well as a smart design decision. I think like the original, the older Souls games, they kind of, they are, compared to what Elden Ring is, they're a little more linear as an experience, you know? And the reason I say that is because, again, I've said this before, but like it allows From Software to kind of orchestrate tension in a little more deliberate way. And by that, I mean, they can like set up scenarios that push you and pull you and manipulate you in certain ways and control the pace of how you're getting through a game and also what you're, and that gives them a kind of insight into the psychology of a player as well. Like they know that having just lost hair, this part is going to be frustrating on the way up, or it's going to be like a challenge. It's going to feel more like a challenge, and they can kind of tweak it and kind of Geppetto the kind of scenarios to make sure that you they're puppeteering some interesting feelings, if you get what I mean. And that isn't as possible in an open world game where you're coming at it from so many different angles and so many different options are available to you. Stealth is now an option, verticality is now an option, jumping is now an option. It just doesn't make sense for them to try and stick to the old design thinking where it's like, we're going to try and make this an uphill struggle for everyone. Mm-hmm. It's just not feasible. It won't work, or it will feel off. This time around, it feels like what they've done is they've thought real smart about kind of containing the challenges, the real, real classic Dark Souls challenges, to be in certain areas and enemy bosses. Based on what I played on the preview stuff, it felt like in the open world, things were way more manageable. Like, I feel like no one should have trouble playing that game, provided they have some proficiency with gaming and literacy with gaming. Obviously, if you're brand new to it, or you know, you get some people that just aren't super, super, like, good gamers, let's just say, for want of a better phrase. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's impossible for them. I think that they can just, you know, take their foot off the gas and play at a slower pace, and it feels good to do that. I spent a lot of time just kind of walking around and kiting enemies while fighting one-on-one and that kind of stuff, and it felt really good. But then when I got to a boss fight, it kind of, like, I think that the shock of it is going to be like the flips is the switch is flipped there, and it turns into an older experience where you're like, oh shit, this is no joke again. And I think that might catch people off guard, but like what Miyazaki said there is definitely like something I think is going to happen a lot. Co-op, I feel like this is the game where obviously we're not 100% sure on how it's going to feel in game, given that their systems for inviting other people to the game in the past has been kind of janky.
Yeah.
But I feel like this will be the game where people play co-op way, way more. Like, and it's almost like, I think it's going to be like, for a lot of people, it will be like, I only played it co-op.
Yeah,
I did not play it single player.
This is a multiplayer game to me. Yeah, this is
going to be this. Yeah, this is, they're going to treat this like Monster Hunter in a lot of ways, and I feel like this is the game that it facilitates that way better, because I think in the older games you had scenarios where it's like you'd summon someone in, they'd help you with a boss, and then they'd be gone. And it needed to be that way because there wasn't a lot of real estate and space in that world, in those worlds, to make full playthroughs super interesting. I feel like when you did do co-op, it robbed you slightly of the experience. Not to say that anyone who did it that way has played it wrong. I did it a bunch of the times those ways as well, and I feel like it's super valid. But it becomes a different kind of game. I feel like this is now built with co-op in mind, if you know what I mean, as opposed to with like people are going to play this start to finish in co-op instead of people are going to use co-op up to get over this hurdle specifically and then go back to playing single player.
Yeah, I really like that. I also really like this statement from Miyazaki. You know, I think the From Software Souls games are, and when I say Souls, right, I'm including Bloodborne, Sekiro, and all that stuff.
Yeah,
that, right. I've always stood by the difficulty. You know, I think the difficulty in those games are good for what those experiences are. You know, I think accessibility is a different conversation from difficulty, right? Like, and that's where I think they could grow and get better. You know, I would love to see more accessibility options, and we'll see what Elden Ring does to maybe implement more. Fingers crossed that they implement way more accessibility options. But in terms of what Elden Ring is, right, I've had conversations with Barrett on other shows. I think one of our recent post shows, actually, with me and Andy, we were talking about how Barrett's expectations for how he's going to play Elden Ring. I think Barrett foresees himself probably playing like 5 hours and then probably bouncing off, because Souls games traditionally aren't as much of his jam. But, you know, as me and Andy were talking about it, I think we had the thing of kind of what the statement from Miyazaki is getting at, in terms of this is kind of it's a different flow of a game from a From Software game, seemingly, where when we talk about, we're talking about like the action games, right? We're talking about the kind of the verbs you do in them, right? And From Software games, a lot of those verbs is like hit and dodge, and like you have to be really good at those specific verbs, right? You have to be really good at the action, because of what you mentioned in terms of the linearity of it and how every experience feels tailored to get from one lamp to the next, and like every single encounter you have trying to get to the next lamp feels so orchestrated, and it feels so much like, cool, you got to fight your way through this. Whereas in Elden Ring, seems like going back to the verb thing, right? Explore as a verb is going to have way more of an impact on your experience with this game than purely just the action. And I think that is something that's going to open the game up just naturally because of the nature of the game. You're going to spend more time just hanging out in the world, exploring the world, following points of interest, following things that you see in the world. And I think that's going to let people get a lot more game time out of it that wouldn't have seen that game time if it was restricted to more specific the action parts of it.
Yeah, and the thing that excites me about that is it kind of allows you to kind of fulfill roles or allow different kinds of people to take point in different kinds of areas of the game, which is, this is an idealized version of it that I've had in my head. But what I was always excited about was like jumping into the game with someone like Barrett, who perhaps isn't super into those kind of games, but I know likes to explore worlds and find stuff like that and have these moments where it's like, hey, we're in. No,
we don't explore, and we know why. Okay.
You get into rooms where shit blows up. And
that is a good MGS reference. You don't explore when Kevin tells you.
Yeah.
Kevin tells you explore. You don't explore, because that's how you get blown up.
But like, you know, you jump into a world like that, and it's like, oh, I know that my moment to shine is going to be when we get into those super high tension, like skill based boss fights. So in those moments, I will take point. But when we're outside in the world, I can let someone like Barrett or someone else that I'm playing with, like a friend who maybe is super not into souls, be like, you take point, I'll play support, and you know, carry, we'll go on. And then when we're in the boss fight, we switch up the roles where it's like you hang back, just use your bow and arrow, whatever it may be, and I'll get in there and we'll figure this out together. Like that, the kind of different shifts in like priority allows different kinds of gameplay styles to emerge and take point. And I think that could be potentially interesting. And I do believe, like, I'm excited to be kind of the chaperone or the Sherpa for a lot of people who want to get into Souls games now. Like, that's something that I love doing. Like, you know, when number one liar on the internet, Greg Miller, was saying or playing through Bloodborne. When he was playing through Bloodborne and he needed some help with a boss fight, who did he call in, Blessing?
Who did he call in?
It was me.
Oh, I thought it was like Mike or something.
It was me, managing editor of GameSpot. I know exactly what you're talking about, yes. .com. Let me ask you, Blessing, did he call in anyone from Game Informer?
No, he didn't.
He did not. No. I rest my case.
I can check it. I can call Alex Van Aken and see if Craig called.
No,
he did not.
Remember that. But like, that was really, really happy for me. Like, I was excited by that. It made me really happy. Like, I jumped in and like helped him out a bit and bounced. And I love doing that. So now that I can do that more in a game, like, that's like my kind of experience. Like, that's how a lot of us Souls fans.
God,
it's so good. It's gonna be.
Maybe that's what I need to do. I need to call people up like Alex Van Aken, you know.
Yeah, do it.
I mean, Alex Van Aken, he just beat Bloodborne.
Once he gets stomped, he just beat Bloodborne.
Yeah, he just beat Bloodborne recently, getting ready for Elden Ring. Yeah.
Okay,
and
cool.
So call up Alex Van Aken.
I beat Bloodborne weekly, so I don't know why that's exciting. Like, I'm playing.
it's because you're part of the number one.
I don't know if you know, but like, I stream Sekiro all the time, and like, just I played Sekiro the other day, and I clapped like 7 bosses. Jeez,
but did you do it blindfolded? Jesus.
You didn't do a blindfolded, that's true.
Yeah, that's
I wanted to do a blindfolded run from Tam. I think you could do it if you really
tried. I think I could do it. Let's not forget, I did. There was a period where I could do most of Metal Gear Solid 1 blindfolded based on echolocation only. And that was when I was young and had the time. But, you know, I can't.
I was telling Tim the other day that, like, give me a solid week. I'll give you the first star in Super Mario 64 blindfolded. Give me a week of practice.
I respect that, but I think that you forget how weird the camera is in that game.
That's true. No, you're right. That camera is insane.
It is insane. Like, I mean, let's not forget that was like one of the first games to behave like that
to have that kind of camera.
Yeah. So like, it is that Lakitu or whatever it's called.
I'll get Lakitu under my control. Yeah. I'll figure it out.
I would love to see that though. I would love to see that.
Make it happen. Maybe we'll put on the thermometer when we go back to the studio.
For sure.
I need everybody to raise that money because I want to do that. Exactly. I want to try it out. Do you know what else I'm excited for, Tam? I'm excited to tell everybody about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can go to get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
When it comes to getting a good night's sleep, there's only one thing you need: a good mattress. Forget all those gimmicks like mattress toppers and weighted blankets. If your mattress is terrible, your sleep is going to be terrible. So get the only thing you truly need: a Purple mattress. Only Purple mattresses have the Gel Flex Grid. It's a super stretchy, ultra squishy material that adapts and flexes around pressure points and doesn't retain heat. How do I know? Well, I talked to a young man named Timothy Geddes, and Timothy swears by the Purple pillow. Then, on top of that, he used to have a roommate named Joey Noel who swore by her Purple mattress. That's right. Kind of funny sleeping all over this Purple stuff and loving every minute of it. Getting a great night's sleep starts with having a great mattress. Get a Purple mattress. Go to purple.com/kindoffunny and use the code kindoffunny. For a limited time, you can get 10% off any order of $200 or more. That's purple.com/kindoffunny. Code kindoffunny for 10% off any order of $200 or more. That's purple.com/kindoffunny. Promo code kindoffunny. Terms apply. There are a ton of worthwhile goals to set for yourself this year, and personally, learning a new language with Babbel is at the top of my list. Babbel is the addictively fun, fast, and easy language learning app that has sold more than 10 million subscriptions. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Greg, and as you know, I'm in love with a French-Canadian named Geneviève Saint-Ange. And Jen, of course, first language is French. She learned English later on, and I've been trying to learn French, but I keep falling off. I've got Babbel on my phone. I'm ready to do it in 2022. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. You can choose from 14 different languages like Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you improve your pronunciation and accent. I could probably use that for English. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to Babbel.com and use the promo code KINDOFFUNNY, all one word. That's BABBEL.com, code KINDOFFUNNY. Babbel, language for life.
Tam, do you hear that outside?
I do, yeah.
It's the sound of the leaves changing color, I think. Because it's a new season.
You can hear the leaves change color?
I can
color?
Hear the... I'm like Daredevil, Barrett. I'm the echolocation. I got the chemical in my eyes. And I can hear the leaves changing color because it's review season,
you're
Barrett. I'm so excited for fucking...
I don't know about you, but I can hear it. I can hear a man screaming. So is that what leaves sound like when they change color?
That just person like is reviewing
that's
some games.
That's the sound of them dying, you know? That's the sound of them going, ah!
Yeah. It's like, god damn it, I just died in a redacted game. Oh, man, you hate to see it. Tam, we got a lot more exciting news to talk about. Like story number three, Yacht Club is about to make a mega announcement. This comes from a blog post on their website.
Oh, Jesus. When you said Yacht Club, I was thinking about the... let's carry on.
Tell me what you're thinking about, because now I'm curious.
I was thinking about the Bored Ape Yacht Club, and I was like, why are you doing this? I don't want the NFT people.
I missed this. Yeah, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Carry on.
Oh, that'd be crazy. They're about to make a mega video game. We just acquired Activision Blizzard too. We got half of it. We're proud to announce that the third official Yacht Club Games Presents will be hosted on G4's Twitch channel. We'll be focusing on a selection of games that have brand new content currently in development. We also have a hair-raisingly exciting mega announcement. They put that in all caps. You do not want to miss this historic event. Tim, is it time? Are we getting Shovel Knight 64?
I was just going to say that exact same thing. I was going to say we're going to get like the Castlevania 64 or Lords of the Fallen version of Shovel Knight. And I would be 100% up for it.
Yeah.
Lords of the Fallen? Lords of Shadow. Lords of Shadow. Lords of Shadow. The is that Mercury Steam? Was it Mercury Steam?
It's one. You're asking me quite... You're
I'm asking a lot of questions in rapid succession, but it was...
I did not play that game, so I can only answer one of those questions.
Lords of Shadows 1 was very good, I thought. Yeah. Lords of Shadow 2 was... What happened, bro? What did you do? But still, that was a good game. But I would love to see them kind of bring back... Because this is a type of game they revived, right? Like this classic... NES, SNES era platformer, and they did amazing work with it. I would love it if Yacht Club games was like, all right, we're moving on to 3D platformers. Like, everyone who does 3D platformers always does it as, you know, the classic Banjo-Kazooie, rare era of 3D platformers. Everyone who wants to bring those back does it with that kind of style, aesthetic, tone, and kind of vibe. I would love to see a studio do one of the other types of 3D action platformers, you know, the Castlevania style, where it was a little more like gritty, edgy, that kind of stuff. And it feels like this is the studio that could do it. It doesn't have to be with Shovel Knight, of course. I would love it if they were like, hey, we've created our own Castlevania now, because Konami ain't sure as shit ain't doing anything with it. So let's do it ourselves. If you want to buy Castlevania NFTs, that's what Konami's got for you. That's not what we want. We don't want JPEGs and GIFs. We want actual full-on games. And imagine if they came out and were like, Bloodstained's another one, actually, that is out there. So fair play to them. Igarashi's still at it. But like, if they came out and they were like, we're doing a 3D action platformer in the vein of Castlevania 64 / Lords of Shadow, and we've got either Shovel Knight or a brand new character, a brand new IP, let's do it. It's kind of like Housemarque going from Rezogun to Returnal, my mind.
Yacht Club was to make that kind of switch, I think that would be magical. Ooh, that would be magical glow up for that studio. For a studio that is already they've already had their glow up, right?
They're an incredible studio. Yeah.
That would be a crazy transition for them to go from that into making their own Returnal, kind of like, hey, this is a big budget. The skill that we've taken from making Shovel Knight, we're now turning into a big budget game. That'd be wild. Now, here's the thing, right? We talk a lot about managing expectations on this show and how studios or publishers do a good or bad job in terms of managing expectations for their announcement. I feel like this is very particular wording, saying that we also have a hair-raisingly exciting mega announcement. That is not something you say lightly, I don't think. And this is me just speculating, Tam. This is me just reading into shit, right? Mm-hmm. The word mega... Could they be making a Mega Man?
I did not even think of that.
Oh.
That was the first thing that I thought when I read that. I was like, mega announcement feels like very particular words.
Oh.
See, I thought they said groundbreaking at some point as well. Or am I
they might have. I didn't include the full blog post, but blog post.
The thing that's weird about it is, like, for you, it's interesting that you focused on Mega. I focused on hair-raisingly. Like, why use... Hair-raisingly is one, not a very commonly used phrase anymore. Two, super gross. Like, it's like got some, like, real... Like, as a hairy man, let me tell you, the idea of hair-raisingly is not a good mental image.
Is there something that comes to mind when you say hair? Are they making Conker?
Donkey Kong. The hairiest character in video games.
Dude, if they announced a new Donkey Kong, when I tell you that, like, that would... Like, you would see me do, I used to see me doing a dance on Twitter. I'd record myself doing, like, a happy dance, and I'd post it on the
social media. Kebabs points out, like, could they be making a play on, like, hair raising? Like, it's
a rabbit?
Like a rabbit.
What rabbit?
They got a rabbit character.
Looney Tunes back in action, spiritual successor. Yeah.
They are bringing back Krusty Super Funhouse. No. I honestly, I cannot... figure out what they're doing, but I'm excited to see anything that they do. I would love it if they did Mega Man. That would be amazing. But Capcom has last few Mega Man games. Capcom's own production on it has been pretty good. So I'd be surprised if they were like we're giving it out. If they were like, but then again, they're refocusing on stuff like Monster Hunter, and you know they got Resi, and a lot of their internal teams are making bigger games. So it's not out of the realm of possibilities that they hit up Yacht Club, especially given how universally beloved all of the Shovel Knight games have been, and been like, do you want to do Mega Man for us while we're off making this stuff? That would make perfect sense, but I would love for them to do that. I'm really, really, like, my heart is set on them doing the 3D thing where they like move into a new genre, a new style.
I'm there with you. I would love that so much. Yeah. It's a lot to ask for a developer, you know, just because they you know made something that is 16-bit. 16-bit? You call Shovel Knight 16-bit or 8-bit?
It's like it looks 8-bit, but it's clearly functions like a 16-bit game, if you get what I mean, in a lot of ways. Like they kind of blurred the lines. Like early in marketing, they were like, we're doing NES stuff. But those games do, especially the original Shovel Knight, they do things that the NES was not capable of. So they took some liberties with it.
I feel like it's a big ask for of a developer to be like, hey, you did this thing, now make the next one, but it's a completely different kind of game than what you made. I feel like that's such a big ask. But if they're able to pull it off, like, I think that'd be incredible.
And
he
also points out a good hair-raisingly maybe tidbit. Dragon Ball.
Oh my god, don't do this.
When you turn Super Saiyan, your hair raises.
It does, exactly. Yeah. Don't...
But like, what would a Yacht Club
Dragon Ball game
look like?
So back in the day, there were these Dragon Ball games that were out. Like, I played them on PC, but I can't remember if it was because they were on PC or because I was doing some mad illegal shit. Of course, it was probably not the second because, as everyone knows, I've never done anything illegal in my life. But they had these, like, 2D open world Dragon Ball games where you'd, like, fly around and you'd follow the dragon radar and find the Dragon Balls and get into fights, and often they'd turn into, I think the one that I played would get into like card based battling, which was like you'd be both characters were in the air and like you'd play your cards and then they'd fight and that kind of stuff, and then off you go again. But there were quite a few open worldish, like this is the one I remember, RPG-ish type games. What was this game called? Super Saiyan Densetsu, that might be right, yeah. So like these kind of games, they did exist, and I remember being obsessed with them. And they were a lot of like fun. So I would imagine, like, I think like this is another type of game that Yacht Club Games could do. And it would be super, super interesting. If we're running with the kind of premise that they are working with Dragon Ball, I don't think so, because I think the Dragon Ball licenses are with Bandai Namco. And you know what that means? 3D Arena Fighter till the day you die, baby! That's all you're getting.
Dragon Ball Fighters, too. Dragon Ball Fighters exist, and we don't need another Dragon Ball
season. After that, just quit.
Yeah, just stop. Bandai. You don't need to make any more. Okay?
No more of your nonsense.
Mediocre. Here's the thing. You just unlocked a memory. Kakarot came out.
Kakarot was one of the most
obsessed with it for a little bit.
Kakarot was one of the few games in my life that made me so angry that I made a video about it. Like, so angry. I was like, no. I usually stay away from this shit. I was like, but I've had enough. There's a video on GameSpot which is basically all about Scamco Bandai taking all anime properties and turning them into 3D fighters. I think it's like Anime Games Deserve Better or something like that on GameSpot. And it's just about that. And it was like, I was like so mad about that stuff. And it was because of Kakarot. What was the memory that I unlocked?
You unlocked a memory of me as a kid going on... either Newgrounds or some other Flash game website, MoFunZone.com, whatever other Flash game websites that exist out there, and playing a Dragon Ball Z Flash game where the music that played over it was a MIDI of the Thong Song by Cisco. I don't know if anybody else remembers this, or if this is a like a Mandela effect kind of thing. I swear to God this happened, but I don't know if anybody else remembers this.
This is like that thing where everyone has the legend of Porno Tetris, Kama Sutra Tetris. Everyone knows it.
Or say everyone. I don't know what that is.
Like you watched, you know, the...
Matrix, Men in Black.
Yeah, the Animatrix show, but it was really Men in Black. Also, the video, I found it. It's called Please Stop Turning Anime Into Arena Fighters.
That was the video I made, yeah. That has made me big mad, but... I want to play this Cisco game that you've got going on.
I'm like Googling it right now because there's no way I made this up. There is absolutely no way. And Oh wait, I think I might have found it. I think I might have found it.
Please, before you show it or say anything, what did you type in to find it?
I just typed in Dragon Ball Z Flash game. I
would 100%. I would 100% gone with Dragon Ball Z Cisco, but
here's the thing: the Cisco part wasn't like the like. That wasn't the crazy... Well, that was the crazy thing about it. But, like, that wasn't, like, the notable thing about it. The notable thing about it was that it was, like, a fun Dragon Ball Z Flash game. I didn't realize it was Cisco until later.
Wait, you
like,
have a
memory of it.
Kind of Funny has a working relationship with Cisco, right? Like, you're homies. Like, you hit him up and be like, do you know this... Did you know this existed?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure he'd be like, "Yeah, I played it."
He was like, "Yeah, I made that shit. Yeah, I coded that.
I signed the license to get our song in the game." Yeah, what do you mean? Do I know it? Bear, I send it to you. As you're doing that, let me get into the next news story because we're running late in the
show. Before we move on, I just want to make sure people know that Cisco's best song is "Unleash the Dragon" and not "Thong Songs." Thank you.
What about his feature on the Wild Wild West song?
That was pretty good as well. But "Unleash the Dragon" number one.
Okay. Story number four, Ubisoft's NFT, and this is, again, Tam's on the show, which means we got to talk about NFTs. Ubisoft's NFT bosses say players just don't get it. This is from Tom Phillips at Eurogamer. In December, Ubisoft raised eyebrows when it announced Quartz, an NFT platform for big budget games, which would host resellable in-game items with unique codes stamped on. Despite saying the system would use an, quote, energy-efficient technology, a million times less energy than a Bitcoin transaction, fans still criticized Ubisoft's focus on and championing of a technology they claimed was unnecessary and speculative. Now, two of the faces behind Ubisoft's big NFT push have been interviewed by Australian financial site Finder and said that fans just did not get it. Specifically, fans were said not to understand the upsides to reselling digital items, whereas Ubisoft was simply getting in early on a paradigm shift in gaming. Here's an extended quote in full. Quote, I think gamers don't get what a digital second... Sorry, the phrase I don't think gamers get is a dangerous one to start off with. Let me tell you, Ubisoft bosses, but I continue. I think gamers don't get what a digital secondary market can bring to them, Nicolas Poard, VP at Ubisoft Strategic Innovations Lab, said. Quote, for now, because of the current situation and context of NFTs, gamers really believe it's first destroying the planet, and second, just a tool for speculation. But what we at Ubisoft are seeing first is the end game. The end game is about giving players the opportunity to resell their items once they're finished with them or they're finished playing the game itself. So it's really for them. It's really beneficial, but they don't get it for now.
Also, I just want to point out that Barrett has put the perfect picture, which I sent him earlier, but this is it. This is every NFT person. Shut up!
To continue, also, this is part of a paradigm shift in gaming. Moving from, and is this still a quote? Yeah, this is still a quote from the Ubisoft boss, the NFT boss specifically. Also, this is part of a paradigm shift in gaming. Moving from one economic system to another is not easy to handle. There are a lot of habits you need to go against and a lot of your ingrained mindset you have to shift. It takes time. We know that, end quote. Of course, and this is back to the article. Of course, the views of Poard and Genevois are not those of everyone at Ubisoft. Indeed, other Ubisoft employees reportedly expressed their own discomfort with the company's NFT push in a meeting with boss Yves Guillemot, while a French trade union representing Ubisoft Paris staff members heavily criticized the decision. So there you go. People at Ubisoft are split. Specifically, it's the NFT bosses over there that really want to make it happen that are telling you that.
Wow, the people in charge of NFTs at Ubisoft think that people don't understand NFTs. Who would have thought? Incredible. Isn't it always, it's always the cult leader that's like, you don't get it, to the outsiders. And I just, is this really what you want to be spending your time on, Ubisoft, considering that you chase every other trend? Like, you just shut down Hyperscape because you were chasing the the Battle Royale trend. How did that go for you? Don't you have other things to can worry about? Like NFTs, we've talked about this to death. I've said my piece on it, and I think a lot of people have said this. There is a way to use them. There will be a way to leverage that technology, which is interesting and works within games. I look forward to it. I am excited by it. It's an interesting and like could be potentially groundbreaking piece of technology. The people that created NFTs are currently out there saying, this shit sucks and everyone is grifting. I said it last time I was here. Like, if even if you believe 100% that the future of gaming is NFTs and blockchain and crypto, now is not the time to say it. Because everyone around you is selling snake oil.
Yeah,
like there is literally a story right now circulating that the biggest NFT producer, Bored Ape Yacht Club, is reportedly linked to white. No, not fair. Is reportedly linked to white supremacy and right wing ideology, and has its origins in 4chan. Why would you think this is the right time to come out and say people don't understand NFTs and they are actually good? Not read the room. It's insane shit that is constantly. There's literally the logo of like the white supremacy stuff next to the Yacht Club logo, and it's
again, copy not to paste.
Yeah, Bored Ape stuff, and it's
copy
paste.
They right click saved the logo.
They right click saved it and then used it as their own logo, and like. You should be now is like read the room. It's ridiculous. Like
right?
Again,
yeah, you shouldn't be saying it. You should be putting research into how to make it not fucking destroy
yeah.
the planet.
And the thing is, like, so what you're saying is, as the people in charge of Ubisoft NFTs, you have put your strategy out there. The gaming audience has said, no, this sucks. Instead of going away and thinking about how can we change people's minds on this, how can we present this as something they should care about, how can we show and help them understand what we believe is the future, instead of doing that you roll up with I don't think people get it.
It's a very bad
statement.
All
right?
Like the statement that they should be making is, hey, we hear you, we identify that this is a fucked up space right now with NFTs and how people are taking advantage of it and how so much of it is speculative, right? And we want to utilize this stuff in a way that's going to benefit you, in a way that will be get there in the end game, and so we're going to pull back from now and figure out this stuff and not use it in the meantime. That should be the statement. The fact that they're here and they're like, nah, you don't get it. That's a bullshit statement. It's a very bad statement.
I think gamers don't understand. When has that ever worked out for anyone? Starting as Blessing said earlier, when has starting a statement with that ever worked out for anyone? You think gamers who believe themselves are the smartest people in the world and know everything about gaming always, including me, I'm one of those people, are going to take that sitting down? Like, you think we're not going to be like, what? Don't tell me what I do and don't know. I am like Saeed in Lost. I can triangulate anything and figure it out. That is not how you want to start your statement. It's so stupid. And the other thing is like not reading the room. That one of the most like well-known or one of the most celebrated currently like discussion points or discussion focal points for NFTs is the Folding Ideas 2-hour documentary and explanation, which is basically a kind of university lecture on why NFTs suck and are a scam currently. That is being circulated widely. Like hundreds and thousands of people are learning about NFTs through that piece of work. And it's a top to bottom, like just exploration of the origins of the blockchain, how it links into like banking, finance, how it's being subverted and used for the rich to get richer. And that is becoming the main discussion point. For them to just completely sweep that aside as well, not read the room, not know that's out there, not know that people are linking NFTs now with white supremacy, and roll up and be like, I don't think gamers understand it. Just astronomical levels of like moroness happening right now. Relax.
The one thing I wanted to identify from this article is the specific part where they talk about how the end game is about giving players the opportunity to resell their items once they're finished with them or they're finished playing the game. I don't understand why you can't do that without NFTs. Is that not like a that's what I thought, right? That's the thing you can do without NFTs, right? I don't understand, like, because that is, I think that is the fallback, like, hey, this is a good use. Hey, this is for you, the consumer, right? We want you to be able to resell your stuff. We want you to be able to resell your items. I want, like, a reason for given for why you can't do that with NFTs. I assume that there's not a reason
to be able to nickel and dime you and scam you and stuff.
Exactly.
To get there, yeah. To get to that point, even though that's something people can already do in an internet-based environment, you know?
I think that is why also, like, it's an angering thing, is that you're speaking to people like they're children, and, like, they don't, like, they can't read and they can't, like, identify this shit, right? Like, Barry, you're exactly right, right? And I think we're all saying the same thing here of, like, you're presenting us with the idea of we don't understand what this thing is. But you're giving bad examples for why this thing is would work. But, like, it's stuff that we can identify as, no, you don't have to do that to do that. Like, what are the reasons this is going to benefit me in the immediate time that you can't do without NFTs?
I think, like, counter to, like, I don't think gamers understand, it's assuming that we don't understand anything and we're not stupid, because it's very easy to speak to a gamer and say, this is what we want to do. And they will go, well, Counter-Strike does that on Steam. Like, that's been doing, like, TF2 has, you can sell shit in TF2 and Counter-Strike and various other Steam games easily. How has Valve managed to pull this off and been successful with it without NFTs while you're telling us this is the only way you can do it? That's insane. Like, I think you're underestimating what gamers can and will understand. And the other thing I'll say is the reason why this really, like, rustles my jimmies is, like, right now, we're in the phase where, like, the whole NFT push is getting to the place where it's the classic, like, the fast hit is free approach that people use, you know, is commonly associated with drug dealing. You see everywhere, like, the Paris Hilton, Jimmy Fallon thing was online. I don't know if you've watched that video, but
I've seen it circulated. I can't watch it. It's I can't bring myself to watch it.
It's two incredibly rich people pretending like they give a shit about NFTs to sell NFTs to people. And I think everyone in that audience got free NFTs. They got the one, so they go home and they download the app and they think that they got this new thing now. And that's where the space is going to now. The first hit is free approach is now going everywhere. So, like, people are slowly being indoctrinated into this nonsense, not knowing what is going on. Again, I just want to emphasize, I'm sure that there will be a good use for this technology. I'm excited by it and welcome it. But right now, it's just straight up grifters, left, right, and center, straight up rich people trying to get richer, while you just piss your time, money, and health away chasing these stupid follies.
All right, Tam. I want us all here to take a breath. All right. Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to apologize. Earlier, I made a Lost reference. The phrase, don't tell me what I can and cannot do, is actually a John Locke reference, not a Sage or a reference. Mm-hmm. But I was trying to combine it. You know, it got a bit out of hand.
Again, like, outside, the day is beautiful, right? Because it's a new season. It's review season. So let's take a breath. All right, and I want a palate cleanser. Barrett, if you can go to assets and pull up the footage from the Dragon Ball Z Flash game that I played as a kid. And we're going to listen to it with sound and hope that we don't get clipped.
Hopefully we get DMCA.
It's on YouTube, so I don't think
it's a MIDI version, right?
It's a MIDI version, yeah.
Oh, so we're fine. That's fine.
Right, we should be good.
Give me a second here so y'all can hear it. Yeah. All right, there. Go there. Boom. Okay.
Like, you hear... Hold on. Okay, there we go. So I played this a lot as a kid.
Yeah, I can hear it. It's the starting, right?
It's the starting of the song.
Yeah, it's the starting of the song. I can hear it, yeah.
And I didn't think about it until I was an adult, and I was like, wait a second. Wasn't that the thong song?
That is the thong song. It's, yes, it's the early, the bit with the violin, the strings, or whatever it was.
All right, Barry, you can pull it off. That's good. Thank you for bringing
Remember, I've never done anything illegal, but I've only heard about this from my friends. But remember when Keygens had the absolutely best music on the internet, where you'd like be where allegedly some people would be like, I need the Sony Vegas key serial number.
Oh,
and
you'd open it, and I know exactly what you're talking
music
about.
Would be like just slapping, popping off, and you'd just be like, damn.
See, that's the thing. The best are like slaps that hit that you don't expect. Where you turn on GoldenEye, you hit that menu music, and it's like, whoa. This is Grammy level hip hop beat right here. This is bopping. Like, I need to hear the best of the best MCs rap on this shit.
Yeah.
Tam, we got some quick hits for you. Got three more stories left in the Roper Report, so let's go through them quickly. Story number five, Epic Games Store gave away 765 million free games last year, helping it reach 194 million users. This is Tom Ivan at VGC. The Epic Games Store's user base reached 194 million in 2021, up from 160 million a year earlier. In a new report summarizing the marketplace marketplace's performance in 2021, Epic Games said daily active users peaked at 31.1 million and about peak concurrent users hit 13.2 million. Both figures were about the same previous year. Monthly active users in December rose by 11% to 62 million. As was the case in 2020, the Epic Games Store gave away over 15 games over Christmas 2021, with Shadows offered free every day from December 16th to December 30th. The Epic Games Store gave away 89 free titles in total last year, down from 103 in 2020, with a combined worth of $2,120. Epic said users claimed over 765 million free games. 76 free games broke their peak concurrent records on PC, user records on PC, with an average of 13 times their all-time records, it claims. So there you go. Epic Games Store is out there doing the damn thing.
You love to see it.
You love to see it. Next for quick hits. Netflix has signed a partnership to add more games. This is Chris Scullion at VGC. Netflix has signed a partnership with Canadian games agency Rocket Ride Games to help add more titles to its library of mobile games. Netflix subscribers in numerous regions already have access to a library of mobile titles through the Android and iOS versions of the Netflix app. Two of these games, Domino's Cafe and Nittens, were added to the service in December via Rocket Ride, and now the agency plans to add more games in the coming months. Netflix's mobile games are included as part of a Netflix subscription and contains no ads and no in-app purchases. And again, if it wasn't evident before, I'll say what I keep saying with this Netflix and gaming thing. They are aiming at kids who get access to Netflix on Roku or access to Netflix on their parents' phones to play these games for free. And it's a good strategy because it works. My nephew loves the Roku games that he can play that are basically just repurposed Android games. Like, it's a thing that works. It's a thing that I think gets a lot of people to retain these apps. And so,
yeah,
go get them. And then last one for the Roper Report. Sega quits Japanese arcade business after 50 years. This is Tom Phillips at Eurogamer. After more than 50 years, Sega has pulled out of the Japanese arcade business. All the company's remaining arcades will be sold to arcade company Genda Inc., which operates locations under the Gaigo brand. Sega had signaled the move back in 2020, which, as you might expect, was a particularly poor year for arcade revenue. Back then, it shifted 85% of its arcade shares to Genda. Now, it has offloaded the rest. Of course, this is part of a much longer trend away from the from arcades toward gaming at home, a trend Japan has resisted for longer than many other countries. Over the years, countless arcade locations have shuttered. Unfortunate to hear. Yeah, man, I miss arcades.
Do you know the wild thing is about this is there's going to be a point where people who want to experience what it was like to go to a classic Sega arcade will have to play a Yakuza game to do that, because they are recreated in there, and like even the games are in there. Like, some of the games are in there, right? Like Veg Fighters is in there, and Space Harrier and stuff like that.
There are some game collections. I forget which one was the last one I booted up. Maybe it was Sega, maybe it was another one. But like, there are some game collections that will simulate that arcade experience when you open up. It's like the 30 Sega game type stuff.
Has anyone combined it with like a VR experience?
Oh, for sure. I don't know which ones, but I think I've definitely heard of that happening. Which is a very smart thing to do, right? Yeah. Like, that is the way to do that if you're going to create an arcade experience.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, yeah,
this is up. Yeah, Goro Majima playing on an arcade. That is like the like, that's going to be a hell of a thing a few years from now. Playing these kind of Fantasy Zone. Oh my god, yes.
They had the Sonic Fighters, I think, in
Now we just need to make sure that we preserve the Yakuza games everywhere properly. I mean, they're on PC now, so make sure you play them there.
Tam, I can't wait for... I don't know what I can't wait for, right?
I can't wait for the revival of the arcade scene many, many years from now.
Thank you. Thank you, Tam. Exactly. I can't wait for the arcade scene to rise from its ashes like a phoenix, but that might be so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom and Grop shops today, where'd I look?
You would look at the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily show host each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today, we got, I don't know how to pronounce this one. Vagant. I was scared because like it sounds very close to vagina if I pronounce it a certain way. I'm going to say Vagante. We got Vagante for Xbox One. Mm-hmm. Super Onion Boy 2 for PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, and Xbox One. Uncharted Legacy of Thieves Collection for PS5. Pokemon Legends Arceus for Switch. Active Neurons Puzzle Game for Xbox Series X/S. Record of Lotus War, Deedlit in Wonder Labyrinth for Switch, Don't Be Afraid for Switch, Circus Pocus for Switch, Return 2, Runaway for Switch, Peace Death 2 for Switch, Rogue Tower for PC, and then Gas Station Simulator gets a free car wash update today. Remember, we've partnered with NVIDIA to keep you updated on all the latest GeForce RTX additions to your favorite games, like Midnight Ghost Hunt, which launches in beta with NVIDIA DLSS and Reflex. Possess everyday objects as ghosts and hunt them down as humans in Vaulted Sky Games PvP multiplayer game Midnight Ghost Hunt, which enters beta today. In this game, you can accelerate performance with NVIDIA DLSS and optimize your PC's system latency using NVIDIA Reflex for the fastest, smoothest, most responsive ghost-busting experience possible. So go get on that, Greg Miller.
Ghost-busting? Get out of here. No one cares about that shit.
Deals of the day. This comes from Wario64. There is a Lunar New Year sale on Steam. You can get Hollow Knight for $7.49, and then Hades is $16.24. We got a squad up for you. Reese writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames with a squad up on PlayStation with the username RedHawker23. I need help getting not just one, but two Far Cry Platinums. None of my friends have Far Cry 5 or 6, so I need someone to join me and take out a base and co-op in both games to finally tick them off. I usually play evenings to late nights, UK time, so hit me up if you're willing to help. If you want to play with Reese on PlayStation, you can add them with the username RedHawker23. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong, as we got it wrong, for those watching later on YouTube and podcast services around the globe. Ferg writes in and says, a missed out this week from this week is Rugby 22 that released yesterday. So we missed that yesterday. Mm-hmm. And then Alex J. Sandoval writes in and says, TM said Bandai Namco only makes anime properties into 3D fighters these days, and he's right, but an exception is the upcoming Dragon Ball The Breakers, which is that batshit Dragon Ball / Dead by Daylight mashup.
And even that still looks like a 3D arena
yep.
game somehow. Like, somehow they have made that game look like a 3D arena game. That's what I'm saying, man.
Somebody wrote in to ask about the Sea of Thieves news that came out. I highly recommend checking out Kind of Funny, youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Yesterday's stream, me and Snowbike Mike, before playing Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, we live reacted to the Sea of Thieves stream. So if you want all of our reactions to that, you can go over there on youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays.
And
next week's... go for it, Barrett.
Last thing, because I know Mike put this in the chat. If you want more info and insights from devs, later today, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, we will have on some of the folks from the team at Sea of Thieves talking about the 2022 content live for everybody else tomorrow, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, podcast services around the globe.
Hell yeah. Next week's host for Kind of Funny Games Daily go like this. On Monday, it's me and Cam Hawkins. That's right, friend of the show. He's showing up to guest host on Monday. Tuesday, you're getting Greg and Gary Witta. Wednesday, you're getting me and Andy. Thursday, you're getting Greg and Tim. And then on Friday, you're getting Greg and me. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this is the Community Podcast-a-thon with Greg Miller. He's going to be going through a bunch of different Kind of Funny Best Friends podcasts, appearing on them. And it's going to be a really fun time. Come through, hang out, twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, so stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.